just making start at the moment, just conscious of time because these sessions are only an hour, so I know you like to ask lots of questions. Can I check that everybody here has got a set of handouts for this session in front of them? No? Okay. So can you put your hand up if you haven't got a set of handouts for this session? So I'm Neil Newman, Grant Shepherd Manager. But you've not come to hear me today, you've come to hear my colleague A. Salam, who is the AAT Members and Practice Compliance Manager. Massive long title, that one, isn't it? And obviously, I was going to be talking with you on the dealing with the Bribery Act, a year on from the Act. There will be an opportunity to ask questions throughout this presentation. Because we're recording the session, so it will be available to download after this event, that my colleague will be coming with a roving mic. So if you could just hold off on the question, and then we'll get that recorded onto the mic so other members can download that and hear the questions, because members like to hear the questions that are asked for these sessions. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, over to you.
Thanks very much, Neil. First of all, I must say I'm really impressed at the turnout. I was hoping to just find a few people here to talk about corruption. Maybe it's just the fiver that I've slipped somewhere in your handout. If you look carefully enough, there's a fiver there for everyone. Thanks very much for coming. Anyway, so we'll just wait for everyone to be seated.
Sorry.
Just a quick show of hands. Who in this room has never heard of the UK Bribery Act 2010? So you've never heard of it. This is the first time you're hearing of that piece of legislation. No, please don't be shy. Let's get a conversation going. No, that's fair enough. Fine. Okay. Thank you. Who in this room has never seen that man? Thank you. Fair enough. Okay. This gentleman here has the unfortunate title of being the only person to date convicted of an offence under the UK Bribery Act. Many of us who know about this piece of legislation might be thinking, okay, he's only got a few £50 notes, I think, there. How come he's been done under the UK Bribery Act? Interestingly enough, he was a magistrate's court employee. He was convicted for 6 years and jailed for 6 years for a Section 2 offence of accepting a bribe. I would have thought if you're going to accept a bribe, that is not a very proper way to do it.
Not enough.
Or maybe not enough, like you say. But very interesting. Well, maybe unlucky, I don't know, unfortunate, I don't know. To date, he's the only one that's been convicted anyway. But what he did basically was he was a court clerk in the, I think it was the Red Bridge Magistrates Court, something like that. And he used to accept £500 payments a pop to wipe off traffic summons of the database, of the court's database. He got caught in a sting by the Sun newspaper where a reporter had tried to gave him some money, and that's the money there. But we'll move on very quickly from that. This was just a side show, really. So what next? One of the things that many of you who knew about the Bribery Act when it came out in 2010, one of the key things about that piece of legislation was there was a lot of talk about it. They said everything will become a bribe. You can't tip the butler, you can't tip the waitress, you can't do this, you can't do that. You can't tip the guy who works in the gym. But all of that we now find it's not true, because the act is very specific in terms of what it criminalizes. Given that there's only been one low-value offence to date, being successfully prosecuted to date, many people might be right in thinking, is this just another regulatory burden? I don't know. How many of us are senior managers within our own corporate organizations here? Okay, thank you. How many of us actually have a bribery and corruption policy? You do? No, it's it's not name and shame. Please feel free. Let's get this conversation going. Because I will tell you why it's very important that you actually go back to your offices on Monday and think about that. Okay. There are some key offences that have been created under the Act. I mean, like we all know, bribery and corruption have always been criminal offences in the UK. We all know that. There's always been the offence of bribing a public official and all the lot. But what is new about this piece of legislation, the 2010 legislation, is that one there, and this one as well. So for senior managers, I did say, for example, a minute ago, that how many of you are senior managers within your firms? There is personal liability now created for failure to prevent bribery and corruption. How is that relevant to your businesses? You'll find out in a minute. But just to run through the key offences again, the active bribery, so the actual giving of a bribe, the passive bribery, the receiving of a bribe, bribing a foreign public official, which has always been an offence anyway, failure to prevent a bribe, and personal liability for senior officers. So we'll talk about a bribe, and we all probably have an idea of what a bribe includes anyway. But in terms of this specific legislation, a bribe is not just money. It could be any other advantage, financial, as long as it's an advantage given to a third party, it will constitute a bribe. So gifts and hospitality. I talked about having a bribery and corruption policy earlier on. How many of us have a gifts and hospitality policy within our firms? Okay. Please keep your hands up for a minute. How many of us have actually reviewed those policies since the Bribery Act 2010? Oh, you've created yours since the Bribery Act. Interesting. That's very good. Okay. Facilitation payments, grease payments. Do we all know what that means?
Italy.
Sorry?
Italy.
Well, you can say so. Grease payments, any thoughts? This is payment for a service that you would have received anyway. So, a rough example, you're traveling through a foreign country, you're in a queue for you're at the immigration queue, you will have to go through anyway, but you're right at the back of the queue, you have a very important meeting to get to, and you say to the customs officer or the immigration officer, I'll give you a fiver if you let me go now. That is facilitation payment. That again has been outlawed under the UK Bribery Act. Please let me know if you disagree or if you have any strong opinions regarding any of this. Paying for goods in a restaurant.
Good seat. Just sort of walk in, you say the guys.
Sorry, if you repeat that just for the benefit of the microphone, please.
It's different. So what about if you're in a restaurant?
Yep.
And you pay and you want to go in and sit somewhere. You sort of go up to the first guy, how are you doing? You know, you got loads of money, slip in 30 quid or something.
Okay.
And he takes you to a nice seat.
Okay, that's a good question. Technically, that will be an offence. Technically. And I say that for a reason. However, in order for an offence to be created, there must have been an undue advantage.
Well, I got money.
Well, you can say that, but will someone else have suffered as a result of that? Probably not in a restaurant setting. Everyone will get a seat anyway. When we come to the definitions in a minute, you will see exactly what I mean. But just note here, the offence does not have to be committed in the UK. It can be committed anywhere else in the world. So the purpose of a bribe, and to answer your question, sir, you have to intend to induce or reward the improper performance of a relevant function or activity. Does that answer your question? Sorry.
That could actually be a bribe because you could actually push people to the back.
Which is why I said technically
to the back of the queue.
Absolutely, so. It's a good point. Technically, it could be a bribe, technically, but I don't think you'll find many people jumping up and saying, well, we want to prosecute in that case or in that situation. I mean, I haven't come across any of such, but I don't think people will be jumping up and saying, well, we would like to prosecute him under the Bribery Act. I think you might end up with a punch-up outside the pub or the restaurant, but that's a totally different kettle of fish. But note as well, there has to be a relevant function or activity. Should I make this more confusing? The legislation does not define what that is. Just to make it a bit more confusing and interesting. Sorry.
So what do you think a relevant function or activity is then?
Okay, we'll come to that in a minute. Sorry. And this is what I think it is. Any public or business activity which a reasonable person in the UK would expect to be performed in good faith. So that is a relevant function. If there is that expectation that the function will be performed in good faith. So see how wobbly this is, right? Because there is no list. You can't go and find a list and say, well, this is a relevant function, that is not. A parking attendant, for example, is that a relevant function? A traffic warden?
Sorry. So as an accountant, practicing accountant, how is this, what would be relevant function for me? If somebody came in and said, oh, Neil, how can they bribe me?
Okay, we'll come to that in a minute. Do you mind just holding that thought?
Okay.
Because it's a good question. It's a good question because every time I give a presentation on the Bribery Act to accountants, that is the question I get asked. How is this relevant to us? So I've gone on to it in a minute. Like I said, there has to be an improper performance and a breach of that expectation. Okay, accountants. I know many of us think, well, as accountants, we are sort of low risk when it comes to financial crime. I've got a bit of bad news for you. Because you're not. You are what we describe in the compliance world as enablers. You enable financial crime because that's what you do on your day-to-day job. Anyone strongly disagree?
Financial crime.
I was hoping you'd catch it. I was hoping you'd pick up on that. But, I mean, think about it this way. By the time most of your clients come to you, they're probably already breaching some rules or regulations or indeed some tax laws. Do we all agree? No? If we only... Let's put it out here.
Yes to that because we have an obligation to whistleblow on that. So
absolutely. But by the time your client comes to you, they're probably in a position where they're owing a HMRC or they should have done something they haven't done. And it's your responsibility to help them comply with tax laws. Is that correct? Do you okay. agree with that? So are we all agreed on that?
Yes.
Okay. Let's look at the statement here. This is a very powerful statement from the director of the SFO, the Serious Fraud Office. Let's just look at that for a minute. This statement here by Richard Alderman, the director of the Serious Fraud Office, places accountants right in the spotlight when it comes to the risk of bribery and corruption. I don't know if you can spot the issues there straight away. So deductions, we're talking about deductions. We're talking about tax calculations.
Do you know, to me that almost is saying that they assume that people are, and they're going to have to prove that they're not.
Well, when you do your due diligence, that is your defence under the legislation. And we'll come to some of the procedures now. Your defence is that you've done your due diligence. The assumption is that people will do dodgy things. There is that assumption. You're absolutely correct. But what they know as a fact is many companies, many organisations, and we'll talk about some, we'll look at some case studies in a minute. Many organisations who are involved in bribery and corruption attempt to hide that by fiddling with their books. So they make it look like legitimate expenses, and they will claim deductions where possible. But I'll elaborate on this in a minute. I want to talk about some specific anti-bribery and corruption risks for accountants. Any thoughts, any ideas? I mean, feel free to look at this list, but do you have any other thoughts on this particular issue? How is this relevant to you as an accountant? You talked a minute ago about how will you find yourself in a situation where someone bribes you. That is one. That's just a very tiny element of the UK Bribery Act. And I'll come to that again. But let's look at some of these things we've got here. So we've got clients whose normal course of business involve procurement, construction industries, higher risk of bribery and corruption. Anyone disagree?
I disagree because there's a presumption of guilt until proven innocent in that situation. I have lots of clients who work in the construction industry who I'm quite convinced aren't involved in bribery and corruption.
Absolutely. I mean, I will say possibly 99.9% of your clients will never be involved in this. But what this is saying is that you need to be mindful of the risk. That's all it's saying. You don't have to. There is no obligation for you to report all of your clients who work in that industry, for example, or treat them as criminals.
So are we saying that those that work in the restaurant industry or the farming industry are less likely to be involved in bribery and corruption?
The evidence suggests so. But the farming industry, I'll come to in a minute, because that's an interesting one. We have the recent case, actually, of the potato farmer. I don't know if anyone's aware of that, which we'll talk about in a minute, because that's an interesting one you raise. But let's also look at clients whose normal course of business involve contract tendering and bidding. These are the areas of high exposure to bribery and corruption. False accounting. Are you confident in the accounting records of your clients? I mean, in my role, one of the things I do is to look after complaints. And you'll be amazed how many times I get complaints from clients, and the accountant's response is, well, the clients did not send me the relevant invoice. And I say to them, and you still submitted the annual returns or the accounts or whatever. I say, well, he promised he was going to do it. I say, you can't do that.
But unless we're receiving money for that, I mean, if we're, you know.
Sorry. You said, unless you're receiving money, I think I know where you're going with that, saying, as long as you don't get paid for it, so you're not deliberately involved in the bribery and corruption, are you thinking that won't affect you? And I'll address that again.
Later,
yeah, as we go. I'm still keeping up with this point, but I hope if I come to the end of this and I haven't addressed all your points, please raise it again, because the presentation actually picks up on all the points you're making now. So, in relation to your question, to your specific question, Section 328 of the Proceeds of Crime Act 2002, for many of us who are self-employed or senior managers, we're very familiar with this, the Money Laundering Regulations 2007, the Proceeds of Crime Act 2002. Section 328 says you will be guilty of an offence of entering into an arrangement to facilitate money laundering if you deal in the process of crime. The process of corruption will amount to the process of crime. And that's where your question gets answered. Because it doesn't matter that you haven't got paid for it. Especially, I mean, as long as you've got paid for the work you've done. Absolutely. But you may be... The predicate offence will be corruption. Will be bribery and corruption. So, for example, the client hasn't given you the invoices. You haven't seen any invoices at all. And then it transpires that the client had been involved in bribery and corruption.
Or money laundering.
Bribery and corruption bring the predicate crime. Money laundering is a secondary crime, isn't it? It is. It is a secondary crime. You have to commit. There has to be a criminal offence before money laundering can happen, because it's dealing in the process of crime. Does that make sense? Yeah. Anyone confused?
No.
So the corruption in this case is the predicate offence, while the money laundering is a secondary offence.
So what you're saying is, I think, that if you fail to ask for the receipt for the large piece of equipment that they've claimed that they've purchased,
absolutely,
for example, you have then been party to the crime.
Absolutely, to the money laundering.
And it then becomes money laundering because you've enabled them to...
Absolutely, absolutely.
So you hit twice?
You hit twice, potentially.
Once
absolutely.
Under the bribery and corruption, and then once under money laundering.
Absolutely. It will be unusual these days to find a corruption... or indeed any other criminal investigation that involves money that is not followed by a money laundering investigation as well.
Does that hold for any business conducted in a foreign country?
Absolutely. It covers all of your clients wherever they're based.
But you see, some of the countries, it's the norm. For instance, in China, it's 20% in the pound. In India, it's 40%, it'll take a few years. And in Russia, it's 80%, provided you don't get killed.
No, it's an interesting, it's a very, very interesting point, and one that has been baffling practitioners in the UK, because you're absolutely correct. In some countries, it is perfectly normal to give excessive gifts and hospitality. If someone gives you a contract, there is a legitimate expectation that you will give them a kickback, and it's normal. So how do you deal with that? You have to look at your own policy. So basically, the legislation allows you to think about, to put into consideration local customs, for example. But if we're talking about a serious amount of money, you probably want to speak to the SFO first of all. So to the Serious Fraud Office, to say, this is the situation we're facing. This is what we're trying to do. Please give us some specific advice on how to go about this. Okay. We talked about gift and hospitality policy. You know, make sure it's corruption-proof. It's not enough these days to just say, well, our gift policy is to give out, you know, pens and whatever at the end of the year. You need to look at the specific risks posed by organizations. I mean, I'm fairly confident that we have a wide range of, you know, sizes and types of organizations present in this room today. For some of you, this will never be relevant. For example, if you're a sole practitioner, you need to do as little as possible, really. But if you work in a large practice, these are the kind of things you need to think about. Your anti-bribery and corruption policy, your gift and hospitality policy, and to ensure that it is corruption-proof. If you have joint venture arrangements, again, that may not be relevant to many people in this room, but if you work in a large, in a fairly large organization, it's normal to have joint ventures, you know, in other countries. You want to make sure that they've signed up to your anti-corruption policies. Okay, we talked about what you need, the defense a minute ago. Someone raised a question about the defense. The only defense that the legislation allows for is that an organization had what is called adequate procedures in place to prevent the occurrence of bribery. There is detailed guidance produced by the Ministry of Justice on their website. It is very important, and I talked again about senior managers, and I'm not picking out senior managers today, but as a senior manager, it is very, very important that you're familiar with these procedures. Is there anyone who's responsible for compliance within their firms? So for regulatory compliance? Anyone? You are? Okay. Okay. So you want to go back to your office on Monday, download the Ministry of Justice guidance, and look at it. Because it may well sound very far, you know, far-reaching and irrelevant, but it is very relevant because potentially you may be going to prison for something you haven't done personally. Okay. Like I said earlier, for small businesses, you probably don't have to do anything. If you've got the two clients, your father-in-law and your mother-in-law, your only clients, it's highly unlikely that they'll be involved in bribery and corruption. But you must have done the initial risk assessment. I mean, before coming to that conclusion, you must do the risk assessment of your own practice and say, what are the bribery and corruption risks faced by my business? If the answer to that is none, end of story. You've discharged your obligation under the law. So this adequate procedures we talked about. The first one and the most important one is to conduct a full risk assessment. We're all doing this anyway under the Money Laundering Regulations 2007. Many of us will be very used to conducting risk assessments. AAT, we've produced templates, risk assessment templates on the anti-money laundering toolkit, which you can use to assist your risk assessment. First of all, you want to understand where your risks, your bribery and corruption risks lie. What about your suppliers and joint ventures? You want to think about your suppliers. Obviously, you can't control what your suppliers do, but what you can do is to look at contracts with suppliers. And make sure that your contract specifically addresses the risk of bribery and corruption. So you make it clear where your organization stands in relation to bribery and corruption. Some of the policies I've seen or the contract terms I've seen is, you know, will say something like, if you are involved or if you are convicted of a bribery and corruption offense, that is a ground for for voiding this contract. Do you know what to do if the client, if you suspect your client is involved in bribery and corruption? Do you know what to do? Any thoughts?
Report it to the serious fraud?
Absolutely. You report to the serious fraud office, SFO. They've got a very good reporting mechanism on the website called SFO Confidential. You can use that to report serious fraud to them, bribery and corruption. But also, to protect yourself, it's advisable to make a report to SOCAR. So make a consent report to SOCAR to ask for consent to proceed or indeed not proceed with the transaction.
Pardon me.
Sorry.
When you do write to them, to SOCAR,
yes.
Then you ask them, hey, what's happening?
Yes.
They say, we can't tell you anything under the Information Act, confidentiality, and they don't tell you a thing. So what's the use of reporting anybody?
That's a very good question because, I mean, if you're used to working with law enforcement, you know the way they work is they get a lot of information, they release nothing. That's the way they're set up to operate. They don't give specific feedback on your report. But what they will do, and I think what you are concerned with as a professional accountant, is to either get consent from them to proceed. So if they come back to you to say, well, we're happy for you to proceed with the transaction, that's all you need to know. It may well be the case that there is an ongoing investigation which will take months, you know, to come through. So you're absolutely correct. It's very unlikely that they give you any solid feedback. We talked about the risk assessment earlier on. It's important to monitor and review your bribery and corruption risks on a regular basis. Ongoing monitoring, anyone? Anyone familiar with that term, ongoing monitoring of clients? No? So, the red flags. Basically, that's what it means, the red flags. Your clients who you know, the normal course of business for the client is, say, £20,000 turnover every month. That's what he's been doing for the last 5 years. All of a sudden, that goes up to £200,000. Do you have a red flag in place? And this is not to criminalize the client, and picking up on your point earlier on, but this is just to tell you that you may need to review this client situation again. Because the gross, the income, the client's income is now increased. Is he still doing the same kind of business? Is he doing something else? And it's just to improve your own understanding of the client's business. Do you have a clear policy on bribery and corruption? If you are a large firm, you will need to have a written policy. And I say this again. For smaller firms, it's unlikely that you'll need a written policy. We talked about facilitation payments earlier on. That needs to be clearly addressed in your policy. Is it regularly reviewed? Annual review, at least. What about internal audits? I mean, is anyone here involved in internal audits at all? No? Okay. For internal auditors, it's more common now to find internal auditors auditing compliance. So they will have a compliance audit as well. You may want to include anti-bribery and corruption into that audit just to ensure that your organization's policies are up to date and still relevant. Another element of the adequate procedures is demonstrating top-level commitment. I talked about senior managers a minute ago. Your bribery and corruption policies must be endorsed at the highest level of the organization. It's advisable and it's recommended by the Ministry of Justice guidance that you have a senior partner responsible for that area of work. So this is not something you just give to the HR lady or the HR man or whatever the case is. This is something for a senior partner to be directly responsible for compliance with the policy. Your senior managers need to be trained on managing the organization's anti-bribery and corruption strategy. So if you're a large firm, you need to have a strategy for dealing with anti-bribery and corruption. One, identifying it within your client base, but also ensuring that your business is not used to facilitate money laundering. For this one, you know, just saying, oh yeah, we've got this nice policy on the internet will not do. Because you will need to ensure that the policy has been communicated to the relevant employees. it's effective, it's up to date. And like I said earlier on, if you are a senior manager, there is personal criminal liability attached to this. Ignorance of the law is not an excuse. There is an assumption that you should know the law or have been trained on the law. And I think, I say this to compliance officers all the time. One of the easiest ways to sell compliance to senior managers is to tell them about the personal criminal liability, because no one wants to go to prison. So if you tell them, if you're responsible for compliance, use that as a selling point to your senior managers. To tell them that, listen, if we don't do this right, someone will go to prison or someone could go to prison. So it's very serious. We talked about communication. You need to communicate the policy and supporting guidance to employees and associates. This could be through training, contracts of employment or services, updating your company handbook, or a combination of all based on the outcome of your risk assessment. Just for the lady who, you have a new policy, you said. How have you, if you don't mind sharing that with us, how have you communicated that to your employees?
Basically, we've sat down with the book, and we've just talked it through.
So face-to-face meetings with everyone. Okay, that's good. I mean, are you a large firm or a medium-sized firm?
Small.
All right, that's great. No, it's good. It's good that you're doing that face-to-face training. Like I said earlier, you know, there's no point having a fancy policy on the internet if no one reads it. You should ensure your employees are aware of the policy and risk assess learning needs. So, for example, if you're a business development manager or partner, the risk of bribery and corruption to you is higher than someone who's an accounts assistant. Would you agree? So if you're the one who goes out, you know, to all these different countries trying to get new business for the firm, you are exposed to bribery and corruption. We talked about due diligence. I mean, many of us will be very familiar with due diligence now. Is there anyone in this room who is still not 100% sure of what that term means? Client due diligence. Okay, that's good. That's a good sign. You need to know who your clients are. And I think any effective and good accountant should be ticking all the boxes on this one, because if you don't know your clients, then there is a problem somewhere. You need to know your client, the nature of their businesses, what they do. Can you spot an unusual pattern of payments? You know, if the client's business changes, do you know what the client is doing? Are your suppliers and joint venture partners aware of and committed to your anti-bribery efforts? So for procurement managers as well, these are the kind of things you need to think about. So the guy who supplies stationery to the firm wants to pay for you to go on holiday and things like that. Why is he doing that? Is it to get business? Is that customary in your type of business? Those are the kind of questions you need to ask yourselves. Members in practice, how many members in practice do we have in this room today? Okay, yep, so that's very good. So you should know everything about anti-money laundering risk assessments now anyway. My own suggestion is that you just review your anti-money laundering risk assessment template to include anti-bribery and corruption. There is no need to go and design a brand new template for that. And I think this is the most important one. Don't go over the top. The legislation, this is, and a lot of people say, you know, how is this relevant to us? All of this is just too much for accountants. I'm just a small business. But this legislation actually is one of the ones where common sense has prevailed. Because what it says is, ensure that your actions are proportionate to the risks you've identified. Don't go over the top. You know, direct all your efforts in a proportionate manner to where the risks lie. And that's why I made the example of, you know, clients who work in construction industry. I think, I'm still convinced, and I don't know if you have different experiences, that a client who works, for example, in the construction industry is more exposed to the risk of corruption than someone who runs a local, I don't know, off-license, or maybe not off-license is a bad example, actually. Off-license is a very, very bad example. But maybe your corner shop, maybe your grocery shop down the road. I still think so. But
I'd like to see the evidence that supports it.
That's a good point, but personal views on that one. So why is all of this important? I mean, I've just waffled on for the last half an hour or so about anti-bribery and corruption. Some of you are still sitting here thinking, what's that got to do with me? The Act talks about criminal liability. It creates a strict liability offence. So ignorance is not an excuse here. If, for example, you work for an organisation and your organisation has been investigated for bribery and corruption, as a senior manager, there is a possibility that you will be dragged into it personally. Especially if you like the, you know, the CFO and things, such important decision-making roles. If you're the chief financial officer, if you're the finance manager, if you've signed off all the checks, all the invoices have come through your department, questions will be asked of you. So it's very important that you're aware of the risks of bribery and corruption. The courts have the powers under the Act to impose unlimited fines. So this is not a joke at all. And prison sentences of up to 10 years. As I mentioned earlier, a prosecution for bribery and corruption is likely to also result in a money laundering investigation. That is the way they normally do these things. Also, we talk about regulatory sanctions. It's very likely that if a firm or if an individual has been investigated for corruption, that your professional body would take disciplinary action as well. AAT, for example, the Code of Ethics, talks about professional behaviour, complying with the local laws and the laws of the land. So it's very important. We also have the issue of social responsibility. I mean, this one is it divides people in two ways. You either get it or you don't really care about it, really. Because there is a social responsibility angle to all of this. We all know corruption blight lives. We've all seen this in the UK and abroad, the effect of corruption on organisations. I think, personally, responsible organisations have a duty to prevent their businesses being used for bribery and corruption. Last but not the least, we have reputation. I think we will all agree that if your business is investigated for corruption, it will have a massive impact on your reputation locally, or indeed nationally, depending on the size of your business. We'll look at some examples in a minute. So what do these businesses have in common? Any thoughts?
They've all been investigated in some form or another.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are some odd ones, actually, because, for example, let's start off with Macmillan Publishers. Very reputable company. I mean, I've known them all of my life, all of my school textbooks. Macmillan Publishers. Last year, 2011, they were done by the Serious Fraud Office for a significant amount of money in relation to corruption in Africa. You will think, well, how could Macmillan Publishers get involved in corruption? But what they were doing is they were bribing government officials in those countries to get significant contracts for the publishing of school textbooks. I would have thought they had a CFO, they had an accountant on their board, probably. He probably didn't come to this type of lecture anyway, but but he probably wasn't aware. But it's a very serious, serious allegation. Personally, it shattered their reputation in my own eyes. Because, I mean, it's one of those ones where it's a very good brand. You think of them, you think, no, they are beyond reproach. But to find out they've been doing this for many, many years, I was shocked, to say the least. If we move on to, I won't even talk about the News of the World because I know we all know what they're about anyway. So if we move on to Balfour Beatty as an example again. Again, they were done in 2009, I believe it was, for corruption, for serious corruption in relation to procurement. BAE Systems, we all know what they've been about recently, what they've been getting up to in Saudi Arabia. The Met Police, I put them there for a reason, just for a laugh, really. Well, it's all right. The Met Police, they found themselves in very hot waters as well in relation to bribery and corruption. And this is having a significant impact on their reputation. They've just appointed a new leader now, whose immediate task is basically to rebrand the Met Police. Because the allegations that are coming out, some of them have left people shocked to discover the level of corruption that has been alleged. Serious, serious issues. AON, this is an interesting one because they haven't been found guilty of corruption. What they've been found in breach of is the FSA found that they did not have systems and procedures in place to prevent bribery and corruption within their firm. So we all know AON, they're a large insurance company, international company, American company, I believe. But the FSA fined them a significant amount of money, I think it was £7 million, for failures in their systems and controls to deal with bribery and corruption. So if you're from a large practice, think about it that way. It's a big issue. It's not a joke at all. Let's talk about Sainsbury's. Sorry. May I? Sorry, good question.
Just going to say, these were all done before 2010, which is why the only unlucky person is this clerk.
Absolutely. All of these have been done, bar one of them,
so
actually.
So now if this happens now, then presumably some of these people will go to prison.
Absolutely. Some of these guys will go to prison. Absolutely. But I'll talk about Sainsbury's in a minute. Sainsbury's, anyone seen Sainsbury's in the news recently, negatively? No? Potato farmer? Anyone heard of him? No? Okay, there's this bloke who I believe he was in charge of procurement. He was the potato man for Sainsbury's, basically. He's responsible for getting all the potatoes into Sainsbury's, you know, in the UK. And apparently what he's been doing is there's this guy who's also a farmer, who's a potato farmer, who's been putting money aside in a special pot to sell potato to him at a very, very overcharged rate, if you like. So they've been basically bleeding Sainsbury's for many, many years. So he's going to this one man, buying all of Sainsbury's potatoes from this one guy because he's getting a kickback from him. And they've recently been found, well, I think they were convicted last week, or it could have been Monday, actually. And that one might come under the UK Bribery Act, actually, because it's a very recent case. Again, the Sainsbury's guy, very interesting and relevant to accountants, because I believe the chief financial officer of the firm was also investigated as part of this. Serious, serious bribery and corruption case. Millions and millions of pounds over the last few years. Okay. The odd one actually is Sainsbury's and Aeon actually, because they haven't been involved in corruption themselves as an organization. But they've had individuals within them involved in different ways with corruption. With Sainsbury's, I think the judge did say that they had adequate systems in place to prevent corruption. So even though as an organization, an employee could be found guilty of corruption under the Bribery Act, the organization will have a defense if it can demonstrate that there were adequate procedures in place to prevent corruption. Any thoughts before we move on from this one?
Thinking this through very logically, would I be right in thinking that the gentleman who was successfully prosecuted for taking the money to expunge the driving offences would have been prosecuted anyway under previously existent legislation?
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely.
Right. So therefore, governments in theory don't do things that are meaningless. Mm. So therefore they must have brought this legislation in because of some perceived ill or some perceived fault.
Absolutely.
Okay. So surely the logical conclusion is that it's not working.
This one or the previous one?
This one.
Well,
or has it had time to work yet?
Yeah, I think it will be unfair to the SFO to say it's not working. They've only had, a year, if that, anyway.
You know, the way you introduced it was by sort of highlighting the fact there's only been one prosecution.
I think that prosecution was very important, and I'll say why. In the compliance field, when the guy was when he was convicted, a lot of people said, hold on a minute, I thought this was about senior managers. I thought this was about corporate fraud. I thought this was about corporate corruption. Why are they being, choosing this guy £500 corruption? I think people were expecting to see £5 million, £50 million, and I think that was the issue. It wasn't that he was convicted. It was the fact that people thought, well, this is a low level crime. That would have been a crime anyway. But saying that, the SFO, the indications from the SFO is that they are going through some fairly major investigations at the moment, and that we will see some of these cases come to light over the next few months.
The thing that is right in the back of my mind is the BAE Systems one.
Absolutely.
Where, of course, what happened was the Serious Fraud Office were investigating them, but then the investigation got stamped on by the politicians.
Absolutely, absolutely. Absolutely, and I think the BAE Systems one may have played a part in the UK bribery act, because what I'll tell you is the UK government got criticised heavily by the OECD in relation to that case, and I think that was the reason they thought, well, we'll just bring the bribery act into force. Because before the UK bribery act, the perception was that the UK was soft on bribery and corruption. That was the generally held perception, and I think some of this is cultural, because we've always thought there is no corruption here. When we hear, as a kid, when you hear corruption, you think of a third world country or some far, far places. Until recently, we had the MP issue, and everyone realized that, listen, hold on a minute, it's happening right here in our own country. And I think that is one of the key drivers, actually, was the BAE case, because Europe was saying to the UK, listen, you need to sort your country out first before you preach the rest of the world. You haven't got systems in place to prevent corruption. There is corruption going on in your country, even in Parliament.
So maybe if we come back to this in 2 years' time, we may have some...
Hopefully.
some sort of ticks to put on the board there.
Hopefully. I mean, who knows? Time will tell. Thank you for that question.
Sorry,
I've got one at the back there. Sorry.
Surely this is a very fine line. It's been known in the construction industry to, if you wanted a contract to, let's say, build a supermarket, that you would probably have to do some, let's say, artificial landscaping around that. But also you might have to put a contribution in to, let's say, finance a community hall or a school.
Mm.
This is a very fine line.
It is. But I think I'll go back to the definition I made here. Because that's an interesting question, and it's a very good one. And it's this one here. So you intend to induce or reward the improper performance of a relevant function. Improper performance being the key words here. So in your example, would you say the performance or the building of a local, of a social club, for example, or a sports club or a youth club or whatever it is, would that be improper performance of a function? I don't think so. But it is a very thin line. Okay, I've just been shown the time by mayor that we've got a minute. One last question just to wrap this up, please.
Hi, I'm speaking as an MIP that we said earlier on. We, as a group, we've been hit with the nonsense of the money laundering, the proceeds of crime, and now this.
Mm.
What's AAT doing to protect its members from being subject to a lot of work that they're not going to get paid for?
Okay. AAT's approach has always been that we will not ask you to do more than you need to do under the law. We'll educate you, we'll make you understand what the law says. We don't make these laws, we have to comply with the laws. We'll educate you on what the law says, will help you understand how you can take a proportionate approach to compliance and will represent your views within the wider, you know, AML community. For example, AAT sits on the Anti-Money Laundering Supervisors Forum, where we share views, we respond to consultations annually on behalf of members. We run an annual anti-money laundering survey. I don't know if anyone here has seen it. No? Every sort of summertime, we have a survey asking members for their views and issues they face about the anti-money laundering regulations, or the money laundering regulations 2007. So in terms of what we do, it's about representing your views, but you need to tell us what the challenges are.
So AAT are going to tell us how to comply, but they're not going to try and get rid of it.
Well, that's an interesting one. AAT cannot get rid of it. It will be, you know, false. I mean, the government is committed to all of this.
But they can campaign on our behalf.
Well, if there are specific issues, absolutely. If there are specific burdens created by the legislation, absolutely. But I think a reasonable complaint will have to be based on difficulties in complying, not the cost of compliance. So not the fact that, you know, you're not paid to do the additional work, I'm afraid.
Alternatively, you could make sure it's a level playing field and make sure that everybody else complies.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think there is increased awareness now across the board. Even estate agents, they have to comply with the money laundering regulations 2007. So people, because what we can't allow is that people use regulation as a competitive advantage. So if a client comes to you, for example, and you ask for passport and ID, and it goes down the road to another accountant, and, you know, the accountant is happy to take him on without no questions asked. We can't allow for that, which is why even unqualified accountants, so accountants who are not qualified professionally, have to be registered for supervision with HMRC. So it is a playing level. It is a level playing field, absolutely. Well, sort of. But thank you very much for your time. May has now told me we've overrun our time, but thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoy the weekend. Thank you.